This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we will visit with Amanda Brunson of Prevent Child Abuse Louisiana. She will comment about the ramifications of a Destrehan High School alleged incident involving two teachers of age and a 16-year-old male student. What does this mean as far as the implications around the state and the impressions created nationally about Louisiana? Also, Tim Barfield, the Secretary of the Department of Revenue, another tax amnesty program starts this week, and we will talk with him about that and more. Tim Barfield, of course, former head of the Shaw Group, and a man who's been president in Baton Rouge for some time. And Roy Fletcher on the first debate between Mary Landrieu and Bill Cassidy and Rob Manus. Now the news. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757, Inkstershow at WRKF.org. And you may tweet us at Jim Inkster Show. We begin with Amanda Brunson. 12 years she has been with the Prevent Child Abuse Louisiana organization. And in the last few weeks, Louisiana has been under a microscope nationally. People magazine back in the state again last week after doing a Scott Rogers expose a few weeks ago. And it involves two high school teachers, Shelley Dufresne, 32, Rachel Respis, 24. They've both been booked with carnal knowledge, indecent behavior, and contributing to the delinquency of a minor for an alleged September 12th incident at an apartment in Kenner involving a 16-year-old student, a male student who is now 17 years old. Now, child abuse is a sensitive topic and an important one, and it unfortunately happens, and this is a way that has generated national attention and some guffaws, but it's serious stuff, isn't it?
It is. It is.
What do you make of this incident? Is the attention warranted that it is receiving?
Well, you know, unfortunately, it took a child having to go through this for us to really open up the conversation about it. But the good thing is now we are willing to have a dialogue about it. And I think, you know, when you say guffaws, there have been lots of comments on social media and following news stories about, you know, attaboy for this 16-year-old boy who has had sexual relations with his teachers. But that's really unfortunate because we're still talking about a child here and we're talking about adults who have violated positions of trust and responsibility.
The boy allegedly was, crowing to his classmates about what was going on, bragging about this. It would seem that this particular kind of abuse is a bit exotic. This is not the usual case, is it?
Right, it is not. But unfortunately, most people don't realize that child sexual abuse is often perpetrated by people that the child or the family knows and trusts. 90% of child sexual abuse, that's the case. So it may be a teacher or a coach, or it could be a family member or a family friend.
297-5633 is your number. And two attractive young women, teachers, allegedly involved with a 16-year-old student who is now 17 years old. Now, in Louisiana, the age of consent is what?
Well, you know, there are so many nuances in the law because a lot of it in Louisiana depends on the age of the victim and the age difference between the victim and the perpetrator. So you have little stages, I guess, within the law, and that information can be found online or be found by calling your local law enforcement.
Well, 17, I think, is the age of consent, but between 17 and 21, Louisiana law forbids sexual encounters between students and educators. And this would include college professors with 20-year-old students or 21-year-old students at LSU. And I would imagine this kind of thing happens on occasion. What do you think about this particular situation in which professors, teachers sometimes are involved with their students?
You know, this is really also a call to action for parents to really know who their children are interacting with, who they're hanging out with, who they're communicating with through their cell phones, through social media, inside school and outside school. And there's great training available at a very, very low cost across the state of Louisiana and across the country. It's called Darkness to Light Stewards of Children Program. There are lots of local organizations here that offer it. It's a two-hour workshop that really helps parents learn the facts about child sexual abuse, but most importantly, learn how to minimize opportunities so that it doesn't happen to their child, and then learn how to recognize it and react responsibly to it.
Why is the impression different when it's a heterosexual thing involving a female older teacher and a male younger student? Why is that different?
You know, I wish I could say. I think that gender roles play a lot into the public perception when something like this happens. I have a feeling that the outcry would be much greater and much different if this were a male teacher and a female student. But we've got to realize that the long-lasting implications of this, whether it's male or female, they're huge. You know, 60% of first-teen pregnancies are preceded by an incident of child sexual abuse. And when we talk about male survivors, they're 70% more likely to seek psychological treatment for issues like substance abuse, suicidal thoughts, attempted suicide. So even when, you know, it may be an attaboy kind of thing and he may be bragging about it in the moment, there are long-lasting consequences.
And certainly long-lasting consequences for these ladies, whether they're convicted or not. They're certainly their reputations are tarnished. One of them is married with children, and their faces are everywhere, including People magazine. So it's not a very pleasant thing for these people or their families.
Right, or the school system or the community. You know, it goes so far beyond just the impact to this child and these women.
297-5633, and if there is a trial, I would imagine there will be quite a media circus, and it has to do with what we're talking about. There seems to be more interest when it's a female older person, a teacher, and a male younger student, and it would not generate the same kind of thing if the components were different.
Right. And, you know, following Penn State, we had several changes to Louisiana laws, and higher education officials and everybody on campus from primary school, you know, any kind of school campus, they're required to report suspected child abuse and neglect. And so this is also a real opportunity for other schools and school systems to look at what kind of training do the school employees have and what kind of protections are in place to make sure that there's not one-on-one, you know, contact between students and teachers.
297-5633 is your number. What's the most often what is most often the case as far as the scenario with people you deal with? The age is usually, I would think, younger than 17 or 16.
Right. The average reported age for child sexual abuse is 9. And so when we think about needing to talk to our kids about appropriate boundaries and about their bodies and all of those things, most parents are not ready to have those conversations quite so early. But we know that kids are hearing about sex and all kinds of things on the playground, on the bus, even as early as 8. So it's never too early to really start talking to your kids about how to protect themselves.
And in the media-charged world that involves smartphones and computers, things are different now than they were not so long ago.
They are. And so many young kids have Instagram accounts and Twitter accounts and Facebook, and they're texting through their iPods. And so it really, parents have to be vigilant and have to make sure that they're checking up and they're having conversations with their kids on what's appropriate and what isn't.
Well, Prevent Child Abuse Louisiana has been around for a while, and Amanda's been involved with it for a dozen years. How has the process changed for you over that time?
You know, we know that prevention works, which is really a good thing. And so nationally, the rates of child sexual abuse have declined, have continued to decline over the years. And that's really a testament to us willing, you know, we're willing now to have these public dialogues about it and talk about what's acceptable and what isn't. So Prevent Child Abuse Louisiana, with a coalition of other local organizations, have set out on a mission to eliminate child sexual abuse in Louisiana. And our goal is to train 5% of the adult population in the Darkness to Light Stewards of Children program. That's 170,000 mm-hmm. adults in Louisiana. So we really need communities to get involved so we can take it even further.
Michelle asked the question to you, Amanda, regarding this particular case, the one in Destrehan. Do you think it's been overblown by media reports?
I think it's been sensationalized for sure, because, you know, there's all of a sudden conversations about that, you know, this is a great thing for the boy. And a lot of what we've seen, at least that we've been able to follow in the media, a lot of that has come in from also from males and saying, you know, wish it was me or it happened to me. And it's really congratulatory. And so it's unfortunate. At the same time, you know, we need to have clear conversations about what is appropriate and how do we make sure that our kids are protected from situations like this.
Well, it is something that will live with these people for life, and we still have in Louisiana laws that if you're convicted of this kind of an offense, you're on the internet for quite some time, aren't you?
Right, right.
For life?
You know, depending on the offense, you may be followed for life. You may have to register, and for sure, you know, all of the attention that it's garnered is not going to go away.
Is it still a necessity to put a sign in a yard after this kind of a conviction?
I'm not sure if that's still practiced.
But it was for some time. I know that.
It was. And, you know, all parents can go on the state police website and look at the sex offender registry. But as we were talking about earlier, you know, 90% of it being someone that the family knows and trusts, we're not just needing to be vigilant on known sex offenders. You really have to just mm-hmm. comprehensively look at what environments your children are in.
What safeguards can a child take to avoid this kind of abuse?
Well, parents really need to have open conversations with their kids from a very young age about the appropriate names for their body parts and, you know, what's allowed and what's acceptable and what's not as far as other adults or even other children touching them in areas that their bathing suit covers. But what parents can also do is go beyond that to say, to anticipate what situations their kids may be in and help them figure out, you know, what's appropriate and what's not. For example, music lessons. If your kids are in music lessons and that's one adult, one child in a back room with the door mm-hmm. shut, that's not an environment that really is safe for your child.
There is a perception that pedophilia most often involves an older man with a younger boy, but that's not always the case.
It's not. And, you know, so much of child sexual abuse also has nothing to do with pedophilia. It's really just a crime of opportunity for a lot of perpetrators. It's not necessarily that they're fixated on children. It's just that children are easy to access.
And in Louisiana, do you keep records on whether or not we have more of these kinds of cases than in other places?
I think our numbers are about the same as they are nationally. 1 in 10 children will be victimized sexually by the time they turn 18, and that's true across the nation.
Mm-hmm. And most often, for example, this case, will it go to trial, or will there be some kind of settlement outside of the courtroom that is more likely than a trial with all the hoopla that would be accompanied this kind of an event?
Well, it's hard to say, but clearly if these allegations are true, then criminal proceedings need to happen.
Well, there may be some kind of a plea, but I can only imagine spouse, father, mother, children of these two female teachers. It's tough on them. In many ways, they're victims as well.
Right. And as I said earlier, I think the whole community, you know, when something like this happens in a community, everyone is impacted. Certainly, they're impacted to a greater degree. But the school system is really, I'm sure, having to look at their policies and deal with some negative media attention, and as is the whole community.
And what about college professors? They may think they're in a different league once kids get to school. They're kind of grown up, but get to college. But according to the law, if a professor's involved with a 20-year-old co-ed or a female professor's involved with a 20-year-old fraternity boy, then that's a crime.
Right, and with great power comes great responsibility, right? We can't violate those positions of trust.
Well, we've had, of course, the as a listener notes, Kelly, the Bill Clinton thing, that involved a president and an intern, and there were some guffaws about that as well.
That's right. I think it continues to happen, and until we really start to have the conversation about why it's inappropriate and how we prevent it, we'll continue to face these
issues.
Well,
thank you, Amanda Brunson from Prevent Child Abuse Louisiana, and we shall switch gears when we return after this 90-second pause on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, and we'll find out more about tax amnesty in a few minutes, but we are pleased to have in studio Beth Brewster. She is Executive Director of the Companion Animal Alliance, and more than 400 dogs and cats are available for adoption this week. Tell us what's going on right here in our fair city.
Well, this is the first time this has ever happened in this area. We're having a mega adoption event. It's going to cover over 200 miles. There's four agencies involved. It would be Louisiana SPCA, Jefferson SPCA, Plaquemines Animal Welfare Society, and Companion Animal Alliance in Baton Rouge.
Companion Animal Alliance in Baton Rouge, your organization that you've been involved with for 2 years, it does important work.
Well, thank you.
What do you do on a daily basis, Beth?
On a daily basis, we get an average of 50 animals in a day. So all of those animals are seen by vets. They're given shots, vaccines. They're given health evaluations, heartworm tests, if it's a dog, and then given shelter.
Well, over 400 dogs and cats available for adoption between the Louisiana SPCA, the Jefferson SPCA, Plaquemines Animal Welfare Society, and the Companion Animal Alliance in Baton Rouge. Saturday, October 18th, as in this Saturday, there will be four shelters, right?
Four shelters.
Four shelters offering at a reduced adoption rate of $25 for all shelter animals. And for those who love animals, this is an opportunity to show your love. There's a goal of how many adoptions?
The goal is 400 for the group.
For 400. And in this area, we know we've got an issue with stray cats and dogs, and this is an opportunity to do a good thing for our community.
This is a great time to pick your forever friend. It's right before Christmas. I know the kids all want a puppy or a kitten or a cat. Dog, come out. It's $25. It includes the animal's already been spayed and neutered. It's had all of its vaccinations. We're even donating a collar and an ID tag. So if he does get away, then he has a tag on his collar.
All right. Well, the location starting at 11 o'clock Saturday is at 2680 Progress Road.
Yes, it is. It's right across from the airport.
And also at the Acadian Village Petco store, which is on Perkins Road.
Right.
And
we're going to have
only cats at that location, right?
Exactly. Just okay. Cats.
All right. And the website is caabr.org. And the phone number?
225-774-7701.
Okay. 225-774-7701 and caabr.org. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Beth. And now we're joined by Jared Coniglio, who is pinch-hitting for Secretary of Revenue Tim Barfield to talk about tax amnesty. What happened to Barfield?
He had a couple of TV shows this morning.
So he dumped us for TV shows?
He's got a prettier face than me.
Well, he is a handsome guy, but I didn't know he had that kind of vanity. I would think radio is much more important than television.
I guess I'm the radio face.
Well, shame on Tim Barfield for standing us up today. But
we'll get him.
Well, we should. And he used to work for Tiger Rag. I remember when he was in the mailroom licking stamps, and now he's gotten a big head.
Yeah, he's tall now, so there's that.
He's tall, but I've got a score to settle with him now.
There you go.
So
you settle it with him.
Well, I'm ready. And as Nick Saban said yesterday, I'm ticked off.
Boy, he was something else on the radio yesterday. I think he's just firing up his troops.
But Jared, you have a bigger personality than Tim. He's kind of dry.
I'm going to let Tim know that because he says I need to get out more in the public.
Well, I think you should. You're a much more amiable, affable fellow than Barfield.
I appreciate that. I did your show back in 2009.
I know.
When we had the embassy there, so, and listen to you all the time, so appreciate it.
All right. Jared Coniglio, great name.
Yeah, thank you.
And you're the deputy to Mr. Barfield.
Yes,
who's
sir.
Who's a lawyer, former head of the Shaw Group, also big guy at Amedisys, and had the big head today and went on television rather than coming on the radio. But I suspect you and Tim have been working fervently on this tax amnesty program. What's going on? Had one last year. How many times do we have tax amnesty before it becomes something that is really not that important to us?
Well, we actually have, I would call it a drop-dead date. In the 2013 session, they passed the amnesty law, and they actually had planned on having amnesty over 3 years. So we had an amnesty last year. It lasted 60 days. They had an amnesty. We're having an amnesty this year that's going to last 30 days, and they're scheduled to be an amnesty next year, and the parameters haven't actually been set. But they did come back and amend the amnesty bill in 2013. They amended it in 2014, this past session. And they said that after the 2015 amnesty, the state cannot administer another amnesty for 10 years or 2025. So they've actually put something in the law that says that they won't. Now, obviously, they could change it, but there has been some, at least, movement to say this is it. These three amnesties, and we're not going to do another one for 10 years.
Not going to do another one for 10 years, but
at minimum 10 years.
There'll be another governor sometime.
Oh, yeah.
So another governor may decide to do an amnesty, and there'll be a new, unless Barfield convinces the next governor to to make him revenue secretary again, there may be another revenue secretary with a different point of view.
Absolutely. I mean, they could change the law that they create, so... But there's at least something in print. There's something in the law that says it, and hopefully taxpayers look at that as an opportunity and not hedge the bet that there's going to be another one after next year. In fact, the legislature still needs to set the parameters, and there's the possibility of anything, and the parameters not being as gracious as they are this year. So hopefully taxpayers come forward and clear up those delinquent tax liabilities that's out there.
All right, it's a amnesty program beginning on October 15th, which is tomorrow, and actually at midnight, so we're only a few hours away, and ends at 11:59 p.m. on November 14th, 2014. And if you file at 12:01 on the 15th of November, I would imagine Barfield and Jared would say you're too late. So you better be... ready to get it done by 11:59 p.m. on November 14th. Who is eligible?
We have, there's two categories I would like to say. First of all, the Department of Revenue administers over 40 taxes and fees. So the majority of the taxes that your listeners are probably familiar with, withholding, sales tax, individual income tax, corporate tax, those taxes are all eligible. As far as the periods or the years, any tax that had become due and delinquent on or before January 1st of 2014 is eligible. And that the billing process would have notified these taxpayers. We've also sent out over 450,000 invitations. So taxpayers who are delinquent, and as I mentioned, over 450,000, have received an invitation to apply for amnesty already. It's already been mailed out to them. So hopefully if we had their correct address, that they got that invitation.
Last time when you had this program, you raised a lot of money. In fact, more than you thought you would, right?
We did. I'll go back to even 2009, Jim, and say that in 2009 the goal was $200 million and we collected $484 million. Last year, the legislature set the goal at $150 million, and we collected $452 million. This year, the legislature set the goal at $104 million. No, I will tell you though, it's the majority of the money comes from accounts that are in dispute, not necessarily accounts that are delinquent. That's an important thing to get out there is there's 450,000 taxpayers that are delinquent that could take advantage of this. But when you look at historical amnesties that we've had here in the last 5 or 6 years, the majority of that money comes from accounts that are in dispute. So it's a taxpayer, you know, a lot of corporations more or less that just are in dispute with the department on a technical tax issue, and they use amnesty to just decide that this is the time that they're going to accept the department's position and pay the tax that is due under that position.
All right. Well, these people who want to settle up balances prior to January 1 of this year are eligible for amnesty. Taxpayers who failed to file a tax return or a report, and they can make good. Taxpayers who failed to report all income or all tax interest and penalties. Taxpayers who claimed incorrect credits or deductions. And those who misrepresented or admitted any tax due. And certain taxpayers under audit or in administrative or judicial litigation are also available to participate in this. The goal is $104 million. But one of the questions that people like C.B. Fergotson ask, one of the questions is, if you do tax amnesty, then what motivation is there to pay your tax on time?
You know, that's a great question, Jim, and that's really a question for the legislature. This is a legislative initiative. I will tell you that the Department of Revenue also has, you know, the Office of Debt Recovery. So our goal is, hey, look, this is the opportunity for taxpayers to get one final chance to come clean, finalize their tax liability. Because once this period ends, once these amnesties end, the tools that are out there for the Office of Debt Recovery are going to be much more advanced, and the collection efforts are going to be ramped up. But that's a question for the legislature, as far as I'm concerned, as far as how we answer that question. You know, Department of Revenue does an outstanding job at collecting its delinquent taxpayers. So this is just an opportunity to generate some short-term budget money, is the way I'd like to say it.
297-5633 is your number in our remaining time with Jared Coniglio. Roy Fletcher coming in a few moments if everything works according to form. And a question from Leo about bankruptcy. If you filed a petition for bankruptcy, can you participate in the amnesty program?
Yes, you can, Jim. It's a good question. You can. We've sent out invitations to the trustees of bankruptcy, the bankruptcy courts, but you can. You can come forward during amnesty if you're in bankruptcy. There's obviously additional processes that we have to go through because the account is in bankruptcy. But yes, and it would be helpful if the taxpayer who is in bankruptcy come to us, because reaching out to taxpayers that are in bankruptcy is a little cumbersome because of the bankruptcy laws. So it would be easy if they come forward to us, but they are eligible.
Who is not eligible?
Taxpayers that are in criminal litigation with the department, taxes that aren't due, you know, since January 1st of this year. And there's a number of fees and taxes that we administer that have a federal component, and we more or less just collect it for certain entities. For example, the Public Service Commission, we collect inspection and supervision fee. Those would not be eligible. But as I mentioned earlier, for the majority of the taxpayers that are listening, every tax that they are familiar with, they're going to be eligible for this amnesty. You know, Jim, if I can say one other thing that is different that I want your listeners to listen to hear is, for the first time, we're offering installment plans, which is the first time in any amnesty that I've been a part of or even have heard before. We're offering installment plans. A number of taxpayers in the past would have liked to have taken advantage of last year's amnesty or maybe even 09, and we didn't have this opportunity. So there is actually a new concept that we're offering, which is if you sign up during the amnesty period that starts tomorrow and ends on November 14th, and you can't pay the full balance. If you just give us 20% of the amnesty balance, we will allow you to amortize the balance over the remaining balance over six payments, as long as the balance is paid by May 1st of 2015. So that's a new one, and I just want to get that word out as well.
All right, so you're going the extra mile to try to entice these people. Some call them deadbeats. You wouldn't say that, though, would
I would
you?
Not say that, no, sir.
Okay, and sometimes there are legitimate disputes that that can be cleared up. And,
yes, absolutely. That is correct.
Now, there is a website, LDRTaxAmnesty.com, and there's a customer service line, too.
There is. Yeah. LDRTaxAmnesty.com is the website. You can apply there, get frequently asked questions, who's eligible, who's not eligible, some of the things we've talked about. But, yes, as also, we're going to have customer service agents on the line starting Wednesday morning through the entire amnesty period to answer any questions and even take applications over the phone for those few taxpayers that may not have access to the Internet.
All right. Taxpayers in existing installment agreements with the Department of Revenue may be eligible to participate in an installment agreement under the amnesty program. You say this is a relatively new concept, though.
The installment portion is new. I'm not familiar with another amnesty program that had been administered, you know, in the last 10 or so years in the country where there's installment plans. And there may have been, I just, in the limited research we looked at, but I know we haven't. I know the Department of Revenue and the amnesties that we have administered in Louisiana, 09, 13, did not have installment agreements or installment plans available. So this is new. This is a new challenge for the department, and we're ready for that challenge. Our staff has really stepped up. But as I mentioned, it's going to be sign up during the amnesty period, you know, acknowledge that you want to pay, acknowledge that you want this installment opportunity, and then we'll allow you to pay in six installments that, as long as it's paid by May 1st of 2015, you will have benefited from amnesty.
All right. Well,
Jim, it's just an opportunity to grab those few last taxpayers mm-hmm. that may not have that opportunity.
Well, Jared Coniglio, thank you so much, Deputy Secretary for the Department of Revenue. Glad
thank
to have you,
you
with
have
us.
Have a great day, Jim. I appreciate the time.
Thank you. And in a few moments, we're going to hear from Roy Fletcher, the esteemed political consultant, and there is an election 3 weeks from today, and the headliner on the ballot will be the U.S. Senate race. Mary Landrieu seeking a fourth term in the U.S. Senate. Roy Fletcher, at times, has worked for opponents of Senator Landrieu, including the first race when she defeated Lewis Elwood Woody Jenkins by a scant 5,788 votes. Close ones also, not as close as that one, but close victories for Landrieu since then in 2002 over Susie Terrell in a runoff that was in a December election. And in 2008, she won by about 5 percentage points over John Neely Kennedy, the Treasury Secretary. Now it's Bill Cassidy and Rob Manus. And for the first time in this campaign season, there will be a debate involving all three candidates. Bill Cassidy has been playing coy, declining appearances like the Baton Rouge Press Club, and he has not participated in other debate offerings, but tonight he shows up at Centenary College. And what is at stake? Does this really matter? Will people be watching? We'll talk about it with Roy Fletcher. The debate will be broadcast live on C-SPAN and Louisiana Public Broadcasting stations, and we shall return in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 297-5633, or outside our area, 877-217-5757. Inkster Show at WRKF.org, and with us is Roy Fletcher, the longtime political consultant who has been around the block many, many times in high-profile races, including races for the presidency, and one of his former clients is in our state, John McCain, campaigning for William Morgan Cassidy for the U.S. Senate. Roy Fletcher, good morning.
That would be William, Roy William Fletcher.
Roy William Fletcher.
Yeah, there you go.
R.W.
I love the way you It makes everybody seem so distinguished.
Well, John McCain he's campaigning heartily for Congressman Cassidy. And he looks great at 78, by the way.
He really does.
A man who's spent, 5.5 years in captivity and has had bouts with melanoma, had his face cut up, and yet he still looks good. He's a tough, tough guy. And he says, I'm taking on the most powerful man in the world and a senator who has supported him 97% of the time.
Well, he's out there.
Do you think he'll help Bill Cassidy?
I think so, in some ways. He gives Cassidy a little bit of credentials and being able to stay in sort of the middle. And that's what McCain represents. In the Republican Party, he represents the middle. I don't say that he represents the political middle, but in the Republican Party, he does, sort of a moderate conservative. So that helps cast.
All right. So John Sidney McCain is on the trail with Bill Cassidy, and today they're joined by David Bruce Vitter, quite a triumvirate there.
Yeah, I suspect that there might be a little friction there for the days.
If your name comes up, we're going to get some wildly different viewpoints about William Roy William Roy Fletcher.
Roy William Fletcher.
Roy William. Yeah. Okay. All right. I would imagine McCain would be singing your praises. And
I would hope he would say kind of nice things about me, and I would hope Vitter would say bad things about him.
So you would hope that?
Yeah, well, of course.
Okay. By the way, will you be working with Scott Angell?
It looks like way, yes.
Okay, and he is in the race for governor and will be a formidable candidate, and Senator Vitter is as well, and I'm sure that got his attention when Commissioner Angell.
Oh, I don't know that. I doubt that I'm even a fly on the senator.
I imagine Scott Angell is, though.
Yes, I would think so. I think he's going to be a serious candidate.
Mm-hmm. Another of your former clients was at the press club last week, John Kennedy.
And
he did not talk about future political plans. And if I had been able to stay long enough, I would have asked him. But I noticed Senator Vitter had his people there spying on John Kennedy. He must be curious himself as to whether John Neely Kennedy will also get in the governor's race.
I would think so. Yes, I would think he would be. That seems to be once you add Kennedy into the mix, it seems to be the names John Bell. Well, except for one other, and that would be Mitch or Mary Landrieu.
Mitch or Mary?
Yes.
Well, Mary will not run if she's reelected.
Well, no, but if she's defeated, what will she do?
I think she'll become a lobbyist.
Oh, well, that seems to be the career path.
No matter what your party affiliation.
No matter what your party affiliation.
You know, is a man you know, Bob Miller, once said the only thing better than being a congressman or a senator is to be a former congressman or senator.
That's right. That sounds just like Miller.
Well, okay.
That's a good line.
The governor's race, and ordinarily at this time of the year, we would be talking a lot about October of next year. And we're not talking a whole lot about it because we have a big race this year. Next year we've got the governor's race, and we'll have ample time to discuss that. But what about 3 weeks from today, and what will happen tonight with Congressman Cassidy on the same stage with a fellow Republican who's been taking aim at him on the trail, and Rob Manus, and the three-term incumbent Democrat? What do you think? What's at stake tonight?
Well, I think that each one of the candidates have something that they would like to get done tonight. Besides, survival is obviously the greatest modus operandi here. But it seems to me that Menace will want to be, this is his first chance. He had a chance to be on the stage with Mary I think last week. But this is going to be his first chance to really be on the stage with. And I mean, he wants to look as senatorial and at the same time as committed and passionate as he can be. And I think that he, because the fact that he's just on the stage with these two people, it helps him a lot as long as he does a good job. Mary, I mean, there's not much that can be said about Mary that has not already been said. My guess is that both she and Manus will take it to Cassidy, and Cassidy's going to be caught in the crossfire. And, that's going to be a tough position for him, and I think that's one of the reasons that the avoidance has been so strong.
Now, Bill Cassidy is a doctor by training and was a Democrat for most of his career, and that may be brought up tonight, but he is not...
You well chronicled that.
Yeah, and it's worthy that he supported Blanco and Landrieu, and he had a lot of Republican options. He supported Mike Dukakis. Mike Dukakis, of all people. But he's a doctor. He's not a guy who spent his career making speeches. And on this show, and I really enjoyed it when he used to come on with us, he would be quite animated. And when people would disagree with him, he would call the ladies who disagreed with him sister. Well, tonight, if he has a disagreement with Senator Landrieu and he calls her sister, then suddenly that's all over the media. So he has to be somewhat guarded, I would think.
He's got to be guarded. He can't let Rob Manus take him too far to one side, and he can't let Mary get under his skin on the other side. And he has to be guarded. He has to be careful, and he's going to have to take the heat a little bit. But in the if he doesn't make a mistake, something like that, if he doesn't make them, he's going to get out of there and he'll be fine.
Well, in debates, as you know, like Al Gore sighing in the first debate with George Bush in 2000, he did it over and over, but that sighing may have cost him the presidency.
Well, I mean, you never know what. I mean, you just got to be, you got to handle your business for an hour and then get off. However long, and get off the stage and just not, I mean, we remember George H.W. Bush looking at his watch.
Against Bill Clinton. No, he was saying, I've got 43 minutes and I hope I don't make a mistake. And sure enough, looking at his watch was the mistake that most people remember from the 2000 campaign.
Yeah.
No, 1992 campaign.
Yeah, that's right. It's a question of just not faltering in the clutch there, and it's not that you have to win; it's that you have to survive, and that's the key thing to it. I think that Mary, though, I think she's going to be quite frisky tonight. I think she's going to take it to it.
Oh, she's a competitor.
Yeah, she's a competitor.
She's a
contestant. And I mean, she's, but I think there's a sense that they think that they're running behind. Mm-hmm. She's one.
Well, I remember moderating a debate with Senator Landrieu and Treasurer Kennedy in 2008. And Kennedy, who's a nice man, he comes up, "Hey, Jim, how you doing? Good to see you. Have you talked to my brother lately?" And we're doing a little small talk. And then Landrieu walks in and says, "Let's get going now."
Yeah, let's go. I think that's going to be her nature tonight. I think she's going to be ready, put with a helmet on and hit it on. And she's good in the back.
She is. Okay, we're going to take some calls for Roy William Fletcher, Mary Downtown. Mary, good morning. You're on with Roy Fletcher.
Good morning. I do have a question for Roy. Have we become so reduced in Louisiana that we now just vote for who has the R and who has the D? I mean, I don't understand. This is going to be a viable debate tonight. I think people should watch it. But I still see these commercials on TV, and the commercials on television don't tell me very much about these people that are running in these elections. I don't know them. They don't come to my door. I don't get to meet them anywhere. I don't really know them, but I'm not going to just go vote for them blindly because they have an R or a D connected to their name. So what do we do about that? How do we change that around, in your opinion, to where we learn to vote for these people for what they are going to do or say they're going to do, because they're really not running on anything other than the fact that they have an R or a D in front of their name?
All right.
Mary, I think you raise a great issue, and something that I had a discussion about last night with someone. You know, the fact is that there's only so much cost that people want to pay for being involved in power or even knowing it. And the D are shorthand ways of defining somebody. What's happened is that it's become almost a predominant way of defining somebody. And you really, and she's right, you really don't get to know people. That the notion of image and that kind of thing is not nearly as what it is important now as what it used to be, because of the nature of, gee, that's a D and I'm not voting for a D no matter what. Or that's an R and I wouldn't vote for an R if I had to, unless there's two D's or two R's. And then it becomes, you know, mudslinging contest. But yeah, I mean, that happens.
297-5633 for Roy Fletcher. Charles on North Foster. Hello, Charles.
Hello, Jim, and hello, Roy. And Jim, I got a big issue with you on one thing. I don't think it was Al Gore's sign that cost him his election. It was the Supreme Court and folks in Florida. So let's get to my question. Will Rob Manus and will Bill Cassidy distance themselves from Fred Koch, who said the rise of the colored man weighs heavily on the communist takeover of America? I would like to hear them take the Koch brothers and the Koch family to task. Do you?
All right. What about the Koch brothers? Do Louisianians really care about the Koch brothers,
who are
big contributors
not.
To Republican candidates?
No, I'm just telling you. Absolutely not. It's not on the ballot. If you make the point, they spend money. Yeah, they do. But guess what? I mean, make them to task. I mean, that's Mary's job, not theirs.
It's rare that a candidate gives back money from a contributor, though.
Well, you know, I mean, but in this situation and the system that we have now, the candidate can be contributed to by somebody and has no choice about whether or not they accept the contribution. And that goes on TV, and you can't do a damn thing about it.
Donald in Central. Donald, you're on with Roy Fletcher.
Good morning, Mr. Roy.
Yes,
I have a question for you. You know, I've been watching Bill Cassidy, and I've been watching the Congress. He's coming out of a Congress that has a very low approval rating and was responsible for the government shutdown. And how can he convince the voters that he's going to separate himself from that type of behavior?
Well, Landrieu's in the same Congress. Landrieu's also a member of Congress.
I mean, it had as much to do with a shutdown as to do with Republicans. None of those people up there can agree on anything. I mean, it goes back to Mary's question. I mean, if you're an R or a D, you don't talk to each other.
Well, they will be talking tonight. Susie Terrell, in the debate that she had with Senator Landrieu with Tim Russert, said that Mary left her church when she became a supporter for abortion rights. And Landrieu, after the debate, got in her face and said, "This is your last race, Miss Terrell." And Landrieu took it to her. And Bill Cassidy, I would imagine, will face a determined incumbent tonight, but in some ways the roles are reversed. Landrieu's acting like the challenger and Cassidy's acting like the incumbent.
Absolutely. Landrieu is running from behind, and that's my point. If she is running from behind, I believe that to be the case, and most people that are observers to pundits and so on and so forth, and pollsters, she's running from behind, and that's why that she will be far more aggressive tonight. That was a contentious debate with Susie Terrell. Susie held her own. and they both got after it. You know, that was a one-on-one debate too. The third wheel in this thing adds a dimension for Cassidy that's dangerous.
Yeah, he may be more concerned about Maness tonight than Landrieu, but barring something really unforeseen, there's going to be a December runoff, and then Cassidy will have to decide how many times he wants to debate Senator Landrieu.
That's correct.
And yeah. my guess is that if he is within 5 points of her on November 4th, 3 weeks from today, he will once again be the favorite, and he probably will consent to maybe one, possibly two debates, but he's not going to be all that enthused about giving Landrieu a shot to take aim at him.
No, I mean, if it's a runoff, when they get to the runoff, it's four corners for the Cassidy campaign. It's going to be aggressive. But
four corners. Didn't work that well for Guy Lewis.
No, that's right.
They were five slam a jam and went down.
Yeah.
Thank you, Roy. Let's talk again soon.
Be good.
Take care. You too. We'll be back tomorrow. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.